Welcome to today's episode in our series on parts of self. Last week we discussed the nurturing part, and today we're going to talk about logical part and then wrap up the whole parts of self series. So that's what we're learning about today. Okay, this way into your logical part.
All right. Well, welcome back, everybody. So here we are, and we're going to be talking about the logical part today. Right? Okay. All right,
Yes.
Brittany, take it away.
All right. So logical part is probably the most straightforward part of self we have. Its job literally is just to be logical. So that's thinking logically. One plus one equals two. How do I get from point A to point B with the least amount of time and distance in between? So logical parts, again, they're just there to be logical, figure stuff out. When unburdened, they tend to be a more dominant part of ourselves, and in a good way. We want our logical part to be more dominant. It helps us navigate life a little more logically. Not trying to be redundant here, but literally, that's what this part is for. Logical parts look at things with consideration and not emotion, but factor in emotion to the logical equation. So, for example, if I have a problem I'm trying to problem solve and I have some emotions in this, well, my emotions are, again, just signals that say, stress response is on or not. Stress response is on. I've got a real or perceived threat. So, logical part looks at these emotions and say, yeah, there's a stressor. There's a threat here. Is this a real threat? No. Is this a perceived threat? Yes. What steps do we got to take to solve this thing and get rid of this perceived threat? So, logical part isn't emotional, but will understand that emotions are valuable and have something to bring to the table. Logical parts work very well with all of the other parts of self, especially if they're all unburdened as well. However, when logical parts get burdened because things just aren't making sense, they tend to go offline. Logical parts will get burdened and operate, but a lot of time they just want to say, fuck it, I'm out, and let critical tag team in. So, for example, if I'm trying to figure something out and it's just, I just can't figure this out, what the fuck? Yeah, I'm not thinking logically anymore. As there's my critical part, this is fucking stupid. Oh, yeah, I think we all have. Can you think of anyone off the top of your head who's never gotten that frustrated to the point where their logical parts just dipped out?
No, I mean, I'm sure everybody has. I probably haven't seen it in every single person I know,
Sure.
but yeah, I do see it in myself for sure.
Oh, yeah.
In my husband.
Yep, mine too.
And yeah.
Yeah, I think if anyone is in a decently close relationship with anyone, you're going to see that moment at least once. Because life is stressful. We're all going to come up with these frustrating things, and it's just like, it happens to all of us. So our logical parts don't necessarily want to go offline, but they also understand, well, if this isn't making sense and it's not my job anymore, it's another part's job. And so that's why they let critical tag team in, essentially. Any part that is intensely emoting and tapped into the stress response will often throw logical part out of the driver's seat. So if you're trying to be logical, but emotion's too much, stress response is too much, logical's just kicked out. Any part of self that's more tapped into the stress response is going to be more dominant, especially the more intense the stress response is on. Logical part again wants to stay in there, wants to help problem solve what's triggering the stress response. But again, it's not necessarily logical's job to do it all themselves. So again, tag team out, other parts come in, and other parts are more equipped to handle certain situations. So logical part again will really be mindful and thoughtful and like look and see the big picture. And if logical is like, I'm not the right part for the job, they'll help put another part in the driver's seat. So this is where things get tricky. Logical part can get roped in by other burden parts, especially protector and critical. So Protector and Critical rope in Logical to help justify their bad behavior. Like if Critical's saying, well, I want this person to do what I want, and I know I'm being controlling, but I'm just going to justify it by saying, well, you're a terrible person and you don't know what you're doing, and blah, blah, blah. So it could also be like, well, you made me hit you. You know what I'm saying? So logical part will be roped in. It doesn't necessarily want to think these things, but will justify bad behavior to go along with critical and protector when they're in the driver's seat. The more burden protector and critical will be, the more burden logical will be, the more burden any part will be, so on and so forth. Because that really, the more burden protector and critical are, that tells you the amount of burden kid parts someone has. Underneath all of this is burden kid parts, and that burdens protectors and criticals, and then it just burdens the rest. It's a whole cascade of events. So logical knows when it's being roped in, and it knows these behaviors aren't necessarily logical, and it knows it doesn't necessarily want to make sense out of this, but again, it's being held hostage. It's being roped in by protector and critical. Do this or else. I'm trying to think of some other examples here, and honestly, it's really just abuse that is the theme. Abuse and controlling behaviors. Not necessarily just of other people, but of ourselves even, of animals, the environment, objects, so on and so forth. Like if we feel like we're justifying our bad behavior, that's definitely something to look into. So lastly, burdened logical parts tend to dislike burdened kid parts the most because those are the parts with the most emotion. And when logical parts don't necessarily have time for emotion, they don't have time for these kid parts. And that can contribute to an ongoing internal invalidation. We get so much invalidation from the world around us as it is, like, you really aren't that smart, beautiful, whatever. I mean, you're not going to amount to anything. You're terrible. Why try? And so when the world's doing that to us, why do that to ourselves too? Everyone else is doing that. We don't have to jump in on that bandwagon. But logical parts, when burdened, will do that to burden kid parts, especially when burden critical parts are going off about these burden kid parts. So essentially, burden critical stance toward these burden kid parts will prop up burden logical stance toward these kid parts. So I just don't have time for them. Too much. And so logical parts, again, really understand logically why these kid parts are burdened and what has to happen for them to unburden. But it's just when logical parts are burdened, they just don't have the time. I got no time for this. So reeling it back to unburdened logical, these parts really help the most with objective introspection and self-awareness. So I'm just going to pause there really quick. Amy, from your personal experiences, when you're doing introspection, if you're being self-critical, is that helpful in those moments?
Not if I'm being only critical. Obviously, if I'm being like, oh, I could have handled that better. How could I have handled that better? That's different, right? That's not what you're talking about. But yeah, when it's just like, oh, God, I fucked up again. Are you an idiot? You know, I do that sometimes too.
We all do.
Yeah. And then I have to remember that, you know, don't say to yourself what you wouldn't say to your friend. That's hard though. It's easier to say it to myself. I would never say anything like that to somebody else.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah.
We have a lot more practice of filtering and reining it in with other people than we do with ourselves. Yeah. But that example you gave, well, what did I do to, go wrong here? What can I do better next time? That's absolutely stuff our logical part will do for introspection. And unburdened critical helps with that too, of course. But really, logical is just looking like, where did I go wrong? How can I make it go right next time? Literally, how do I get from point A to point B? One plus one equals two. Yeah. The only time unburdened logical part will hinder anything within ourselves is with our own intuition or spirituality. For example, if my intuition is saying, don't go there, And my logical brain's like, well, there's no logical reason not to go there. I'm going to go there. And then I go there and I'm like, oh, it was a shit show. Like my intuition's like, see,
Yeah.
I told you. So logical parts want things to be logical, and spirituality and intuition in that realm is not logical. They will overlap, but they're completely different realms. And so logical wants to put things into a logical box, spirituality, spiritual beliefs, intuition, gut feelings, all of that stuff. They really don't go there. They don't go there. They don't go hand in hand. So when you're in your spiritual realm, you want to ask your logical part to just like, it doesn't have to be logical. Just go with it.
Yeah.
And logical is going to be like, why? Because this doesn't make sense. And I don't know if I like this, but okay, I'll try. Yes, maybe.
Yeah. I see that a lot of times when I am like meditating or I'm just laying in bed thinking about things and or falling asleep and something happens and I'm like, "What was that?" Like that was weird.
Yeah.
I always go to immediately go to, "Oh, your brain's just doing something. It's just your brain is doing some weird shit."
Yep.
That wasn't really your dad, or that wasn't really your pet, or whatever. And then later when I look back, I go, "Well, what if it was? Why can't it be?"
Right.
And so I'm always fighting that. And I think another example is that I tend to be a little bit more childlike, magical thinking. And my husband, the engineer, is
Yes.
you're fucking nuts.
Well, that's the
And
critical
so,
part, yeah.
yeah, so I've got it. I've got it. Well, he will start by saying that's not logical. And I say, I don't
Yeah.
care.
Yeah.
And then it goes to, you're just magical thinking. Well, sure, I
Yeah.
am, but I'm not hurting anybody,
That's right.
including
Right.
myself.
That's
So
right.
why can't I have that?
Yep.
But yeah, so I see that a lot, that especially like with any kind of spirituality or paranormal stuff or anything like that. Like you see that a lot, like in my other podcast where we talk about the TV show The Dead Files. In The Dead Files, we see that a lot with clients, and it's usually, not always, but usually it's the wife who sees things. She's the intuitive, or she's the empath, or she's actually a medium, and she sees stuff like that. And the husband's like, "Ugh, that's not true. That doesn't make any sense." You know, and I get that it's really uncomfortable for somebody who's logical or critical or both are really driving the bus all the time. It's really uncomfortable for them to even pretend to imagine that something else could be going on.
Absolutely. Yeah. Nailed it. Totally. Yeah. So it's really hard because, again, our logical part wants things to make sense. But again, the spiritual realm isn't in the realm of logic. The flip side of this is like religious dogma and really entrenched spiritual beliefs aren't swayed by logic. For example, if you're talking with someone who believes this cow is sacred, like I'm not and saying anything wrong about any religions. Like, I mean, that's a big thing of Hinduism, like cows are sacred. And if someone says this cow is sacred and I'm coming in from a non-Hindu, view of the world, it's like, well, it's just a cow. And I can say, well, this cow was, it's a, I don't know, it's, I don't think they have Holsteins in India, but I don't know. It's a Holstein. Blah blah blah. I was born from this parentage, and blah 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 blah. It's not a sacred thing. It's just a cow. Well, and the other person could be like, "Well, you are nuts because while you might see all of this, you don't see all of this. That's what makes cow sacred." Okay, so we're fighting a battle that's never going to be won because these two things, while they might overlap, are very, very diametrically opposed. In good ways, because spirituality shouldn't necessarily be logical, and logic shouldn't necessarily have that spiritual element, if that makes sense. So, if you're trying to have a debate with someone logically or spiritually, and you're both coming at it from very two, the spiritual versus logical, you might as well just shake hands and be like, "Good day, nice to talk to you, and let's talk about something else some other time." Unless you really want to engage in that, and that's great. As long as you're having a healthy, respectful debate, great, have at it. But just understand, you're probably not going to sway the other person, and the other person's probably not going to sway you. Have you had any experiences of that?
Oh, yeah. Every time I have a conversation about a Dead Fouls episode with my husband. Every single time. And sometimes I feel like he's like, oh, okay. And then he'll, but then if I say this happened and he'll be like, well, that was just a blah, blah, blah. That was there are mice in the walls, or, he's got an answer for everything. And then if I say, no, they already checked and there were no mice in the walls or whatever, he's like, well, then it was something else. I'm like, yeah, it was something else. It was the great grandmother or whatever. And he's like, no, it fucking wasn't. And then I go, okay, I'm done. I'm sorry I even brought it up. I shouldn't. We went too far. I thought we were going well. And now, nope. We hit the road. We hit the roadblock, the wall, and now we're done. Move on. How was your lunch?
Yes, indeed. Yeah, that's it. So, we know how that goes. Let me move on. Our parts of self, the dream team, if we're looking at our parts of self, is spearheaded by logical, unburdened critical, unburdened nurturing, of course. All of these unburdened. Logical, critical, nurturing. Logical because again, it helps you figure stuff out. Critical is there for you, really, to help meet your own needs and wants. And making sure that, you're being respectful, other people are being respectful, and nurturing because you don't just want things black and white. You want to make sure that you're actually taken care of, the other person's actually taken care of. I mean, in our society, especially in our society, in the world in general, there's so many transactional relationships, tit for tat, quid pro quo. And there's very few relationships just built on a mutual respect, and you're a person who's worthy of dignity and my time, and you have value. You might be different, we might be the same, but because you're a human being, you have worth. So having that sort of mindset really comes from nurturing part. The transactional stuff really comes from critical because, it is, for example, we're doing a podcast, we're friends, all of these things, but what we're doing right now in our relationship is kind of transactional. You're my producer, I'm giving you this content, blah, blah, blah. And if that's all a relationship was, that's all it would be. However, with both of us having more dominant nurturing parts, of course we care about each other. I ask how your mom's doing, how are things? And you ask how I'm doing, so on and so forth. It's not just a transaction. It's meaningful. It means more. And that's why we really want our nurturing part to be in this like dream team of our parts of self. Because we don't want things just to be black and white. We don't things just to be, I'm an object, you're a robot kind of stuff. We're humans. We're humans. If any part of you just jumps in the driver's seat and throws logical out or just throws you, the self, out of the driver's seat, that's an area for introspection. That's something that logical can help you with. If you notice, well, my critical part took over. Okay, logical part, help me figure out what went on there. What can we do to help problem solve this perceived threat so critical doesn't have to jump in next time? Or if a burden kid part jumps in the driver's seat, oh, you're treating me so bad. Why are you being so mean? Well, logical part helps figure out, well, what was mean about that situation? What was that other person doing? What did I do to contribute to that? So on and so forth. So if any part of you just jumps into the driver's seat, that's an area for introspection. Just remember, if any part takes over the driver's seat, it feels like it has to. And this is almost always rooted in past bad experiences. And when this happens, again, logical part gets shoved out of the driver's seat, or at least its advisor role to the self. So if the self is more in control, logical is not necessarily driving the bus. The self is, but logical's right here, right in self's ear, being an advisor. And so sometimes that gets kicked out of that spot too, and another part comes into the advisor role where it's not taking over the self altogether. But even with that, that's an area for introspection. So with all of this being said, this is where I'm going to wrap up with all of the parts of self. The best setup I've found to interact with and work with parts of self is what we've been basically talking about. It's developed by Julie Debevoise-Agugia from her basic six-part system. Basically, all of the parts of self we talked about: logical, critical, protector, kid, responsible, nurturing. She basically developed, those are the main functions of parts, and she developed the mental meeting space of how to visualize your parts of self. And that was based from Fraser's dissociative table, which came before her. So I'll just kind of give the very brief, quick and dirty rundown of how this works. First of all, you develop your mental meeting space. This can be somewhere real, somewhere imagined, somewhere you've been, somewhere you've always wanted to go. A lot of my clients will use somewhere in nature, like the beach or the mountains. A lot of people use a room in their house, like the living room, a bedroom, dining room, whatever. I use my dining room because that fits all my parts in. So you just want to just visualize that mental meeting space. So I'm looking at my dining room right now. Put yourself where you want to be in the mental meeting space. Just visualize yourself there. Once you feel like that's solid, cool, you can let it be. And then you start with visualizing one part at a time. Pick a part, any part, doesn't matter. Usually start with logical, that's easier. If you start with kid or protector, that's usually harder to start with. So start with something more prefrontal cortex, like logical lives in there, like in the front of your brain. That's where the most complex processes in your brain take place. So you want more logical, more responsible. Start with those easier parts. And you visualize a part by picking a time you know that part of you was in the driver's seat. So if I'm trying to figure out from point A to point B, or how do I make my way around the Twin Cities so I'm not backtracking and I can hit all my errand spots, boom, 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 and maybe miss all the heavy traffic areas. So that's my logical part. So if I know I'm trying to figure out my errand day in the cities, then I know that's logical. So I'm just from a neutral third party, fly on the wall perspective, I look at myself in that moment, just see like what my facial expressions, body language, emotional feel were. Well, if I'm, just trying to figure something out and just doing errands, I'm probably like, I'm looking at my phone, like, yeah. So I would look at that and then I'm getting a picture of that. Go back to the mental meeting space, put yourself back there, and then bring in that picture of that part of you. And that part of you, once in the mental meeting space, it's like a whole nother person. So you talk with your parts like they're whole other outside people. So let's say you brought logical in, and logical looks around and you're like, hey, logical, and logical might know you, might not. And this is the same process you do with all of your parts till all the basic six are in. So basically, hey, logical, do you know what's up? Yeah. Do you know where you're at? Yeah. Do you know who I am? Yeah. Okay. Any issues we need to address? Nope. Cool. What part do you want to bring in next? I don't know. Let's bring in responsible next. Okay. So you repeat these steps. Pick a time you know you're being responsible. Blah, blah, blah. Well, rinse and repeat until you get all six basic parts in. In between bringing a next one and make sure there's no issues or things that are weird between parts. Like if you bring in responsible next, responsible might look at logical and be like, that wasn't quite right the other day or whatever. Okay, let's address that issue. How can we reach a compromise or, an agreement here? Is she resolved? Cool, let's bring in the next part. So it's fairly simple. It takes time, it takes patience, it takes working with yourself. If this isn't very easy to you, you've not really tried practicing mindfulness or anything like that before. It just takes time and patience. However, if you are looking at your parts of self and you're seeing something that's weird or disturbing in any way, that is a sign that something is deeper that really should be addressed. If you're getting any strong emotions off any of your parts of self, if you're getting any real like beef between parts of self, these are all deeper things that really should be addressed. And if anything feels more overwhelming or intense than you think you can handle, that's when you want to find a therapist for sure. I'm going to loop back around to that. So when things aren't so heavy working with your parts of self, what it really looks like is like you're a CEO having a meeting with your trusted advisors in a boardroom, or you're a coach discussing the best plays with your first string players in a locker room. You're a teacher leading a discussion with your students in a classroom, or you're just you talking with your best friends in your living room. It can look like any of that, whatever you want it to look like. So, again, if you're doing stuff with your parts of self and some stuff comes up, overwhelming, scary, dark, intense, whatever, your best bet is to find a therapist specializing in ego state therapy and EMDR therapy. I'm saying both because you want a therapist who's trained in both, because those are the two therapies that are the most complete for trauma, that really get to the heart of the issue, the roots of the issue, to really bring these things to the surface so they can be dealt with. If things are shoved so far down, 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 we can't even get to it. You can't deal with it. It's got to be brought to the surface to be dealt with.
Yeah.
So some things that can go awry if you keep doing parts work without a good therapist to help you with these deeper things. Things can get really disorienting, destabilizing with parts of self. The way they work together, it forms kind of a containment system for past junk and trauma. So if you start working with parts of self and how they operate starts changing, it can totally break down that containment system. Because parts of self, again, form around trauma and contain it within themselves. So for bringing a part to a surface with trauma in it, it's going to destabilize a little bit. The containment system is the rigid dynamics and patterns of interacting between parts of self. So what happens is with this containment system, it can start cracking. And so that means past traumas that were suppressed or repressed or whatever before start surfacing a little bit. So you might start getting some flashbacks. You might start getting some emotions or body sensations or junk from the past. You're like, oh, I thought I was over this. Probably not.
Probably not.
If the containment system breaks down even more beyond just cracking and fracturing and whatever, it can explode. So I use the example from Ghostbusters, and I know I've talked with you about this one before. So in Ghostbusters, the first movie, they have that ghost containment system where after they, you know, suck all the ghosts into their, you know, their trap, they put the trap in the containment system. You know, it's a big old ghost prison. So the EPA guy comes in the first movie. He says, shut this
Dickless.
Down. Yeah, that's right. Shut this down. And they're like, oh, I don't think we should do that. And he's like, I don't care. Shut this down. And like, oh, I wouldn't do that. He just says, I don't care. Shut this down. And they shut it down and it explodes. And all the ghosts go throughout wreaking havoc in New York. And I love, that's probably my favorite part of the movie. I'm not going to lie.
That's a good part.
But you don't want that in your head.
No.
Don't want that in your head.
No.
Because it makes it really hard to just go through life. If you have trauma after trauma, or even just bit of trauma after bit of trauma bombarding you, it's really hard to function. It's hard to stay focused. It's hard to just be logical. Stress responses going off constantly. It's very disorienting. So if you have some deeper stuff in your parts of self, then it's going to be really important, again, to find a good EMDR and ego state therapist, because it can be very disorienting. Even if it's a minor disorientation, the results of this can essentially just hinder the self from being in control. And that looks different for different people to varying degrees of good, bad, or otherwise. So it's just a caution. If you're looking at parts of self and things don't seem very easy with it, might want to look into a therapist.
When you're working on your mental health, sometimes the smallest rituals make the biggest difference. That's why we love Three Spirit, award-winning non-alcoholic elixirs designed by plant scientists and bartenders to help you feel good in every sense. Each blend has its own mood. Social Elixir helps you to connect and feel uplifted. Livener brings energy and focus without the crash. And Nightcap soothes your mind and body into real rest. Instead of numbing out, these drinks help you tune in, whether you need connection, energy, or calm. Head to us.threespiritdrinks.com and use the code THISWAYIN for 15% off your first order. Three Spirit, crafted for your mind, body, and balance.
So lastly, I'm talking about self-control, because self-control is the best sign of good mental health. And I'm going to sum this up the most succinctly I can. Life's a bitch and then you die.
I've heard that.
Yeah, right? So the thing is, throughout life, you're going to have stresses. You're going to have shit that happens. You're going to come up against real and perceived threats for the rest of your life because we live in a world that is full of real and perceived threats. Good mental health is being able to tackle these threats from a balanced state, incorporating all of your thoughts, emotions, body sensations, motivations, part of self, stress response, intuition, etc., and then using them adaptively to successfully complete the stress response cycle and turning it off. That's good mental health. Being able to confront these real or perceived threats with all of yourself and turning off the stress response. That's good mental health. Poor mental health is the stress response and emotions and parts of self tapped in the stress response, taking over with chronic anger, anxiety, depression, or all of the above and more, with the stress response never completing its cycle or turning off. So essentially, good mental health is problem solving with all of you. Poor mental health is not being able to problem solve because all of you is not able to operate for it. People want to mystify what mental health is, and that's really the long and short of it. What are your thoughts there? I'm just curious.
I mean, I agree with you, of course, about all of that. Obviously, you need all of your parts to work together. And if one of them's not showing up or is showing up pissed off, it's not going to work. You're not going to be a good team. And I get that. Makes a lot of sense. I have a question, and I think that we touched on this. I don't remember if this was a conversation we just had, like at my house, or if this was something we talked about on the show. But when you're talking about picturing the people in your dining room or whatever in your meeting space, what if you are one of those people who cannot picture things in their mind's eye? Because a couple years ago, probably, is when I saw a TikTok where somebody was like, "Did you know that people can picture stuff in their heads?" And I was like, "Do you mean people can't?" Like, I had no idea. And so I started looking into it. And then my cousin recently said to me, "Did you know that?" And she's one that can't, and I can. So, and she thinks that my mom can't because of something my mom told her a while ago. She said, "I don't like reading books because I can't picture in my head what's going on in the book." And that explains so much about why my mom can't explain anything to me right now. It's the dementia for sure, but she also doesn't have any pictures to look back on in her mind. And my cousin was telling me, like, she knows that we went to junior high together, but she has no memories of it because she has no pictures of it. And so I'm wondering, how have you worked with somebody like that? That's aphantasia, right?
Aphantasia.
Aphantasia. So how do you work with somebody who can't do that and they can't picture the different parts?
Great question. Thanks for asking that. That's a good one. So essentially, we have more senses than just sight. And so we want to use all of our senses with this. If we can't see a part, we want to hear it. We want to feel it, smell it. I don't know if we can smell parts, but a lot of time parts of self will communicate in very abstract ways. When parts of self are really unburdened and you have really good grasp of working with your parts of self, you're going to talk with them like we're talking right now. However, less developed parts of self or more burdened or parts of self that have been so shoved into the back of the bus you didn't even know they existed this whole time. I mean, these parts are going to communicate more abstractly. So a lot of the time, you might just be able to hear them. And it's not like hearing them like if you're talking to me, it's hearing them like in my head or in your head or whatever. It could be just a bodily sensation, a felt sense. It could be an emotion that bubbles up. It could be a memory that bubbles up. So essentially, you're not necessarily having to see anything as long as you're sensing in some way. For example, a lot of the time when people's protector parts are really dominant and burdened because of the whole system's burden, the dominant protector part will clamp down on any visualization because if you see how these parts look, that can be destabilizing in and of itself.
Oh, okay.
And I'll give you an example of that. So I've worked with my parts of self a lot. And one of the parts I came across, this is several years ago, was like a toddler part, but it looked dead and decaying. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, that's really disturbing. And so I've been doing parts work for a long time. And even with this own part of myself, I didn't know what to do. So I'm just like, well, we're just going to let this part be in the mental meeting space. We're just going to hang out and just sit with it. It's cool. So I spent like a week just sitting with this dead, decaying little toddler part. And then I eventually it's like, okay, it is what it is. And then this part didn't really talk because this part's negative cognition was, I have no voice. And so this part wasn't talking with me. I could see it, I could sense it, I could feel it. But when I tried talking with this toddler part, I wouldn't get any words back. I would just get a feeling. Or maybe just seeing a facial expression or something. So, like, sometimes you're not going to hear your parts. Sometimes you're not going to see your parts. So, okay, lifting back up, protector parts, when they're really burdened, don't necessarily want you to talk with or even interact with the rest of these parts because how destabilizing it is. And so you will just hear protector part. So, okay, protector part, is it okay if we talk with you today? I guess. This is what I hear back a lot. Okay, well, what's your concern about going there? It's too much. That's usually the concern. So if you can't visualize, it's usually protector part blocking it. However, there are people who are visually impaired. There are people who are bl born blind, so on and so forth. So it doesn't really matter as long as they can again hear. You just want to go with whatever the part is communicating the most through. I mean, if it's through body sensations, go with it. If it's through visualizing, go with it. As long as you're getting a sense. And a lot of people question, is this really what's happening? Am I just making this shit up?
And that's the same kind of thing with your logical part going, that's, you made that up in your head.
Yes, absolutely. So the thing is, what always will tell you if it's real or you're just making shit up is how you physically feel. Your body sensations will tell you if it's real or not. And that's really the anchor for all the parts work that I do and talking with my own parts of self, other people's parts of self. How are you feeling physically with this? And that will tell you almost everything. So as long as you know how to pay attention to what's going on for you physically, you can do parts work. Even if you can't visualize, you can still do parts work. Because there's a lot more senses than just that.
I remember going through this, and there was, I can't, I was, had something to do with a kid part. I don't remember exactly what it was, but I got like a weird tingling feeling all the way up my arm. And I was like, oh, that's, and there was no reason for it. It's not like it was cold in the room or anything like that, but I felt that physical sensation. And I was like, I just had a feeling that was telling me, keep going. This is working. Pay attention. You're doing okay. This is real. And it was weird.
This shit does get
It was
weird. It
weird.
does. Yes. It gets weird. It can even get downright scary. Because when parts of self get so burdened with trauma, they get dark, essentially. And I'm not going to hang out in this very long, but the common theme is essentially this part looks like dark or black, and it has red eyes. And that's a very common theme because this is what we see in cartoons and pop culture and that kind of stuff. If it's, I'm just going to use Bob's Burgers as an example. I know you're not as into Bob's Burgers as your other co-host Megan is, but there's a two-parter. I don't remember what season it is, but it's a Christmas two-parter. It's about the Bleakin. The Bleakin steals Christmas, and so they show this Bleakin, which is the monster or whatever, is who's black with red eyes. So, I mean, how we visualize our parts if they don't look like this is basically a direct representation of our connotation of that part. So if we see a part that's black with red eyes, well, that part is just really burdened with all sorts of trauma. It's not scary, but what it's hanging on to very well could be scary. And some parts are honestly very antagonistic or even abusive to other parts of self when they get this burdened. Some very burdened parts of self will assault other parts of self. Physically, sexually, emotionally, whatever. This has actually happened. Yeah. In session with clients. And this happens, if it's happened in session, it certainly happens in general.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, it looks different, and how it ends up feeling internally is different for different people. A lot of the time, if a part will actually assault another part, you will feel it physically.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. Find a therapist if things get too overwhelming or scary or whatever for you.
Yeah.
Okay. So I want to wrap this up by thanking all of my current and former clients who have taught me so much more than anything and anyone else, especially those who have had the trust in me to allow themselves to be courageous enough to explore and heal their deepest, darkest traumas and parts of self. I also want to thank all the wise and compassionate therapists, trainers, and researchers who have guided me on this path for trauma therapy and healing, especially Julie Debevoya-Gugia, who developed the basic six-part system, Jim Knipe and his EMDR toolbox training and book, Richard Schwartz, the developer of internal family system, Shirley Jean Schmidt, developer of dynamic needs meaning strategy, Sandra Paulson and her EMDR and ego state trainings and books, especially on pre-verbal trauma and very young parts of self, Robin Shapiro, Francine Shapiro, the Watkins, and more, and all of the EMDR trainers and consultants I worked with who have helped me guide me on this path. Okay, that was as fast as I could go.
You didn't have to go fast.
I know. But man, there are so many more people I want to thank. I just want to thank everybody for helping me along this journey. It's been great. Yeah.
Well, and I'm so glad that you've done it, because it's been fascinating for me to learn about it.
Yeah.
I love it. It's so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I wish that had been something that was taught when I was in college and I was taking my psychology classes, because I would have glommed onto that for sure.
Right.
I didn't. Closest we got was, because I'm 100, if you didn't know that. the closest we got when I was in college was the ego and the superego.
Right.
Which was fascinating to me. I loved Freud stuff.
Well, yeah.
I thought it was super interesting.
Yeah.
So this, yeah, definitely would have been something I would have gotten into too.
Absolutely. And of course, they teach Freud because he's like the father of modern psychology or whatever.
Right.
But all of these deeper therapies and modalities and stuff, they're not going to be taught in college. Even in grad school, these were not taught. This was all stuff that had to be learned on the job, essentially.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. No one's really... I'm making a blanket statement. I can't speak for every single program or college or whatever, but essentially no program is going to teach you how to do these types of therapies. They're going to give you the basics of like how to talk with people, that kind of stuff. But the therapy that you learn how to do is through your internship and all the on the job training, essentially you take.
Sure. Okay.
So I didn't graduate an EMDR therapist. I was a baby when I graduated with my master's. My goodness.
With your master's, still, you had so much to learn even after that. That's a lot to think about.
Yes.
Yeah.
But that's why we have continuing education credits every year to renew our license and all of that stuff.
Always new stuff coming up, right?
Oh, yeah, always.
Always new things to learn.
Mm-hmm. But that's a good thing.
In any field. But yeah, in psychology, I imagine. For sure.
And you know, that's my logical part saying that's a good thing, that new things are being learned and researched, and logical parts just eat the shit up. I just give me more.
Yeah. 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 I can see that.
Yes.
Sure. Well, thank you for all of this. This has been super fascinating. Now, we do have a lot of other cool topics that we are planning on covering. This is not the end.
Right.
In fact, next week, we are going to talk about how to find a therapist that works for you and how to decide if that therapist is good for you. You know, you don't have to stick with the first person that you get assigned to.
That's right.
And things like what to look for once you start to see if it's working and that kind of thing. So,
yeah, absolutely. Stay tuned for that.
To talk about. Yeah.
That'll be a good one.
This Way In is a conversation about mental health and everyday well-being. but it is not therapy. Listening to this podcast does not create a therapist-client relationship, and the information we share is for educational and entertainment purposes only. If you are feeling overwhelmed or struggling with your mental health, please reach out to a qualified professional in your area. Never delay, disregard, or change professional recommendations or advice because of something you heard here. And please remember that any views expressed here are our own and don't represent any licensing boards. This Way In is co-produced by Brittany Baxter Dameron and me, Amy Lotzberg, at Collected Sounds Media. I also edit and manage the show, which is part of the Collected Sounds Independent Podcast Network.